Gang's all here. Good morning. It is 9:32. We're gathered in the 12th floor of the state capitol for a work session on case number TU-10-73, Tatanka Wind Power LLC decommissioning plan and cost. Julie Fedorchak, the chair of the commission, also here are Randy Christman and Brian Crosius. And we have staff Adam Renfant and Brian Johnson. And with that, we'll, I don't have any opening comments. Brian, do you have any?
No.
We'll kick it over to our esteemed portfolio holder on this subject, Randy.
So, I think if, so Tatanka's desire to kind of switch the way in which we plan for decommissioning of wind turbines, I think is not a small change. It is a huge change. If you look at the numbers, their original estimate using traditional decommissioning scenarios similar to what other firms, several dozen of them around the state have done, it was about $15.75 million. This plan is kind of in its second version now. First of all, they came in with the original plan to pull them over with dozers with a lower dollar cost, but also kind of to sweeten the pot a little bit, they offered a 10% contingency on top of that estimate. And then also to do some extra work that we require of newer wind farms but weren't required when this one went up. And the 10% contingency would have been enough to cover the cost of that additional work. And the bottom line was that came out to something under $8.9 million or about 56% of what a traditional decommissioning estimate would have been. The second version here is a little more generous. I don't think a lot more generous in that the additional work that they have offered to do, they're adding the cost of that on to their new style decommissioning plan and then adding the 10% contingency. So it brings it up to a little less than $9.5 million. So it is about 60% of a traditional decommissioning. There's not really a lot of evidence out there on this method of this felling method, and I don't claim to have like lots of very good and verifiable and proven information. In fact, a lot of these things, when you try something new in the world of reclamation, it takes years to find out how well it worked. That's why we're still doing studies at ag research institutes on coal mine reclamation after we've been doing it for many decades. But one of the wind farms that was cited here on page 4 is, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right, the Cerro Gordo wind project. And what I was able to quickly gather off the internet, it's a 40 megawatt project that will now have 15 turbines, and those 15 replace 55. It doesn't say this, but if I can presume that the output of the wind farm stayed the same, they had 55 turbines for probably a 40 megawatt wind farm. So those turbines were, in my mind, not exactly comparable to the kinds of things that we're talking about in this all. But bigger than that, whether we're talking about how comparable a 3/4 megawatt wind turbine might be with a 2.5 or 3 megawatt wind turbine is a different comparison I want to make for why I do not think this is a good idea for the state of North Dakota. When we started our wind farm decommissioning plan, we knew we couldn't do everything similar to what we do with coal mining because there just isn't a program with staff and a national program and all the things that coal mine reclamation has. We knew this was not going to be nearly as stringent as coal mining is. But we did try and do things when possible that were comparable. But, you know, a couple examples of where it just isn't. Coal mines would not be able to leave big concrete slabs 3 or 4 feet under the ground. You know, that just would be a non-starter. Coal mines have to have very intense inspection before anything ever gets done out there. So there's a record of actually what was there before. And then we have inspectors in the field the whole time. And a much more intense regime. But we did try and do some things to make sure that there was something available in case we have to do decommissioning someday, and also to try and assure that it doesn't get left to us, that the companies that are the operators actually do it. And so we did our financial assurance program with some similarities, same requirements for who can do corporate guarantees and quite a few similarities. And so I want to remind everyone of some things that we do with financial assurances and the coal mine reclamation program, which has worked so well. They follow what's called a worst case scenario. Now we know, and they could bring all kinds of engineers and provide very good evidence of this. They can move, let's say, 3 million yards of material a certain distance for X number of dollars. And they can do it very efficiently because they have gigantic equipment. In their, for figuring their financial assurances, those aren't the numbers we use. We figure what it will cost with much smaller equipment that we would be able to get contractors in and use. And that is the worst case. So it's not X, like what the mine can do. It's X plus quite a bit. And we're figuring what we have the capabilities to do. And that's, you know, one example of what we mean by the worst case scenario when we figure that up. We also then have it recalculated quite frequently. And one of the things that most often is the determinative factor in changing their financial assurance requirement are fuel costs and like labor and contractor costs. So right now where we're at, and I don't know about the kinds of contractors that do a lot of wind farm work with those kinds of cranes and such, but if they're like just about everything else in the country, the inflation we've seen in the last year or year and a half probably has all of our wind farm financial assurances significantly low right now. Now we're talking about taking not a worst case scenario, but kind of a best possible hope, and using that as the new standard. And believe me, if it is accepted in this, just like when we accepted one waiver on light mitigation, and now we're up to, I think, 8 more. No one else is going to want to pay, and if it was a similar size wind farm, have $15.5 million on financial assurances when they can get by for $9.5 million. And so if we accept this, we are lowering it to about 60% for everyone. And so I think we should be aware of that. And when, like I said, part of the reason for that worst case scenario concept in mining is to make sure there's enough money in case we have to do it. But also part of it is to make sure that with their big equipment, they can do it cheaper. And so they have an incentive to do it and not leave it to us. We go to something like this, and okay, let's say we accept this at the $9.478 million, and a few years from now they're ready to do something different. And there's been quite a bit of inflation, and it's just a little bit more expensive than $9.478 million. The financial incentive there is to let us do it. Do we want to leave future commissioners with the job of doing all the contracting and everything for over 2,000 wind turbines spread over almost 500,000 acres in North Dakota? I really think that we are venturing into dangerous ground by setting financial assurances based on something with this little history and comparative examples of success over a short, short period of time.
Well, I have some questions, and I think I'd ask Brian to come in because I think they're going to be, if you don't mind, if I jump in.
Sure, yeah. Go ahead. I have thoughts.
I do have one more point I want to make, though. Also, another thing that we don't have here, I had a note of this and I just missed it, that we do have in mining that helps protect the commission in North Dakota is through the Office of Surface Mining, there's the applicant violator system. Therein, you know, most mining companies have operations in multiple states. That's another incentive for the mine to actually do their own reclamation, because if, let's say, with North American, if we set a particular permit too low and now the plant closes and so they're going to shut down, even though their costs might be more than the financial assurances, they still have an incentive to do it themselves, because if they leave that to us through OSM's applicant violator system, they probably won't get permit renewals on any of their other mining activities anywhere around the country. We don't have that with wind reclamation because there is no national program, because most states don't require it. So we also, in this case, do not have that as a carrot to get the companies to do it themselves. It really is a matter of whichever is in their best interest. And if we cut these too close, that's going to be us doing the work. Okay, sorry.
No, that's okay. Okay, so I've got a few questions that are going to require some legal expertise. And I'm just going to put these out because you may weave in responses, Brian. They might be like two-part questions, if you will. First of all, though, just a point on the dollar amounts. We've had estimates that have come in at $128,000 per turbine. We've had estimates that have come in north of $300,000 or around the $300,000 mark per turbine, which is significantly more than the 56% difference. So I think we have to reconcile that from a consistency standpoint. Why is that okay for some of these operators to come in with these? And I pointed it out. I said, I don't think they can get it done for that. Lowball figures. In comparison to, I think, the one that MDU had $278,000 per turbine. And I know there's some differences based on volume, how many turbines are coming down, et cetera. But some of the NextEra decommissioning plans were $128,000 per turbine. Well, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, when we're talking about 56%, that was 150% ballpark. So I think we have to reconcile that number, those numbers, from a consistency standpoint. But I don't know how you make a comparison, because this is a different process. And I don't even know how you compare it to coal mining reclamation, because that is far more intrusive. I mean, they're ripping out, you know, several hundred feet of overburden. So I think the mechanics of how you get the ground and the area back to normal is important to make sure that we do that. But this is just, it's like saying, well, we're going to make a comparison to abandoned oil wells. And they're all going to have their own different set of standards. The end result is, does it look like it did before they showed up? But here's, I thought the company laid out a fair amount of detail, provided some additional detail on the plan. And here's my question to you, Brian. Well, one, on the cost thing, are we being discriminatory? And the second is, since they provided how they would go about the hybrid felling method now, does the burden of proof now shift to us to say, well, it's not going to work, and here are the specifics, here's the data that shows that it won't work? Because doesn't the burden of proof begin with, you know, start with the company in this case, and once presented, it shifts to us to refute that if we don't believe it or see it differently, I guess would be a better way of saying it. So anyway, a couple questions for you.
What was your first question again?
Discriminatory in terms of, you know, we've allowed, because cost keeps coming up over and over again, and we approved $128,000 decommissioning scenarios per turbine, and then we've approved $278,000 decommissioning plans per turbine. And yeah, I know there's some variables, but not to that extent.
Well, I think there's always going to be differences, and I think you hit on a lot of the key things, the number of towers, location in the state, probably many, many more. You know, I think what the law and our rules spell out is that we have to look at the plan as presented and determine whether or not it's feasible and adequate.
Brian, can you tell me, provide the law and rules reference?
Sure. I sure can. That's kind of what I was digging around for. 4902.27 is the law on decommissioning of renewable energy conversion facilities. Did you want me to read it to you?
No, I'll pull it up.
So it's 4902.27 for the law, and then under rule, it comes in under 6909.09. That whole section is wind facility decommissioning. So
thank you.
So there is in our rules decommissioning responsibility. The owner is responsible for decommissioning. So if they were to walk away and force us to decommission it, they'd be in violation of our rules because it is their responsibility, so they could be held accountable under that.
And what sort of recourse do we have?
Since that one doesn't fall under siting, I would assume that we'd be looking at we could revoke site certificate, we could take all that stuff away, but if it's being decommissioned, that's not going to be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
That one's probably falls under the $5,000 fine. I don't think we could levy the heavier one because it doesn't fall under siting or any of the exceptions that have that $10,000 a day with the $200,000 cap.
Brian, do you mind if I ask some more questions on this subject?
No, I'm done. I just wanted to put that out so everyone knows what's going through my noggin.
Because this was one of the areas that I was interested in exploring more, too. Like, so the decommissioning financial assurances are to ensure that there's enough money available to decommission it appropriately. We assume that that's going to be handled by the company. How do we, if the company isn't around to do it, let's say, how do we access that money?
Generally, if there's a bond, we call on the bond.
Do we hold all this stuff? I mean,
no, we don't. Bonds are issued through a bank, and we are told which bank holds it and what the value is, and then we have to actually physically go and serve it on the bank. So if it's an out-of-state bank, somebody might have to take a trip to go serve it at the bank to get that bond money to reclaim it.
And so in a situation where there's a bankruptcy or something, would we be first in line for that bond?
Boy, that's bankruptcy's a little bit out of my knowledge.
Well, I think that, I mean, that's kind of the situation that Randy's pointing to, is bankruptcy. Because otherwise the company would have to do it.
Well, it's
I mean,
it's
what other situations would result in us having to do the reclamation?
I think, that's one worry, no mm-hmm. doubt about it. But in between there is another one and that I have, but I'm not sure if I'm right about this. So Tatanka is a subsidiary of Acciona. And if this wind farm just ages out and Acciona is doing fine, but they just don't want this anymore, it's Tatanka that we have a certificate with and have the requirement, right? So even though Acciona might be doing fine, they could just leave this to us to take care of and maybe issue a $5,000 fine. But at that point, Tatanka has nothing, even though Acciona does.
Sure. And I think that's where, like, that scenario kind of plays into why we've allowed parent guarantees and things like that. It's because most of these are under a larger parent corporation. And if they're going to offer up and say, yep, when it comes down to it, we'll pay for the decommissioning. That's where the parent guarantee comes in and how that kind of tracks down that route. But I know that I don't believe this one is not a parent guarantee, and that's not being considered. So it does make it a little bit more difficult, I think, to go after the parent company. I'm not saying impossible, but depending on what type of financial assurance we have that fits within our rules, it kind of dictates what road we go down to collect on that.
Okay.
And the bond would be issued by Acciona, likely.
Not by Tatanka.
Yes.
No.
This is the bond. Yeah. They're proposing if we accept their decommissioning plan of cost estimate, that within, it's either 60 or 90 days, I believe it's 60 days, that they will file with the commission a bond.
Okay.
And that would be filed under Acciona, not Tatanka, which would be the operating company only.
All right.
Can I ask a question?
Just
a clarification. You said, I've got the Century Code 490227. What are the rules, 69?
0909.
0909. Okay, just a second. Okay.
Sorry. I know, I couldn't find it. So, to adopt rules, the rules must address loss method. Okay. So some of the things that I agree, thoughts that I have, Randy and Brian. So I agree their coal mining to wind farm reclamation is not an apples to apples. The soil impact is a much less on wind farm. The visual impact is probably a lot more than on a wind farm and coal mining. So they're different. But I wouldn't say that one is a lot less than the other. I mean, I think they have larger and smaller impacts on different things. So that said, I feel like, are you concerned? Is your concern, Randy, mostly about not having enough money available?
I'd say it's pretty close to saying it's about not having enough money available, and whatever the amount is, not having the incentive for the company to do it like they're supposed to, as opposed to leaving it to us.
Okay. So the money thing is definitely, at play here, but the incentive for the company to do it. I mean, that feels to me like some of the things you're outlining suggest to me that we don't have our rules correctly. That, you know, they've applied under the rules as they're written. And if the rules as they're written aren't appropriate to cover our concerns, then we should change the rules. Like, if we're not planning, if we're not doing enough to plan for the worst case scenario, or if we need to have the financial assurances updated more frequently. I mean, I think those are legitimate concerns. But I don't know that it's fair to hold this plan and this company accountable for those by not allowing, you know, for disapproving this plan. I think the felling method, yes, it is different, but there's going to be changes in this technology that is available in the course of 10 years' time. I think they've outlined in their materials some pretty compelling advantages to this method. It is cheaper. That's a disadvantage, and I understand where you're coming from on the concern about not having enough money. But I think that, you know, there are some advantages that I see to the felling method that could potentially be a lot better for the reclamation of it. Not having those huge cranes traveling all across the land and the environmental impact that has is no small thing. And the number of people that are involved being smaller. And I like that on this latest one, they're felling the towers onto the roads, not onto the land. So, I mean, some of those things, I think we need to be prepared to accommodate some new methodologies. And the nature of this business, everything is new. So it's by nature not going to be real proven.
And so if it's, I mean, I adamantly disagree with it. I think we're gutting a system that could have worked. I'm going to leave.
Well, I'm not saying these are what's going through my mind. But, I'm not saying that's what I'm going to.
I do want to say that while it might work, but like I said, when I looked at the example that was given in Iowa, I mean, it's much smaller. I don't know that we don't have any witnesses other than the company, and how would we? That's way down in Iowa. They don't know we're talking about this. As far as the company's concerned, it worked. I don't know if those people feel it worked, and we may not know for a few years the evidence of compaction or anything like that. But at any rate, I do want to say, whatever we decide, I just really want to emphasize, I think our rules are fine in that we're supposed to make judgment calls, and the rules require us to approve decommissioning plans. And so if we want to look at a cheaper alternative with the and find it acceptable with this, the submitted amount of evidence of its effectiveness, that's what we're here for. But I don't think we could ever write rules that would imagine every possibility in advance, and then as years go by, like you say, things evolve, and there's some new idea, new concept, new technique that then doesn't fit it quite right. You just can't write rules to that level of precision. And we're here to make judgment calls, and part of the rules is that we approve or disapprove of decommissioning plans. And so we've got one in front of us that we can approve or disapprove.
Well, you did outline a pretty significant concern about the rules and that they aren't updated. You know, the financial assurances are not updated very frequently to account for inflation. That doesn't just affect this one, it affects any of them.
Well, but I can't remember the time period, but there's a longer gap at the beginning, and then after that, there is a time frame.
Mm-hmm.
I once thought it could have been a little bit more frequent. This was what we decided. And so they do get updated.
And when we update them, do we relook at the plans? Do we have the opportunity to relook at the plans?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Yeah, it's so must be updated and filed with the commission 10 years after initial approval of the decommissioning plan, and then continue to be updated and filed with the commission every 5 years until decommissioning is complete. The commission may at any time require the owner to file an updated decommissioning plan.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so that gives us an option either way to revisit this the next time they have to update, because, I mean, although this one is 10 years old already.
I believe so.
Yeah, it went COD in 2010.
Yeah. So what if we required, do we have the ability to require on a more frequent updating? Well, it says, yeah, we can require it at any time. So since this is an older facility, yeah, we could require an update sooner. And maybe, you know, I think it's important to be open to and accommodate new technology or new methodology. So I'm not sure the best way to do that here, and I agree with you, Randy, that if we approve this here, it will likely become the standard for others. So that is one point that I definitely agree with you on. So it is a big deal. It isn't a small matter. It is a big matter. So I'm looking for a way to accommodate methodology changes and protect, you know, the financial assurances. So if it was me, I'd like to maybe make sure we have enough money, but be open to this methodology as sort of like the, you know, middle or compromise position.
Well, I had said that from whenever we had this on the agenda.
Oh, okay.
Before, that when it comes time to decommission one, if a company wants to come in and propose something like this different, I don't want to commit to what the answer is going to be because I don't know exactly what the plan will be at that time.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's necessarily an objection to trying something like this with the first one. But this request is to make this the plan and to account for this plan's dollar amount in their financial assurances. And so that is my big problem with it. Yes, if everybody planned for the worst with the traditional methods and has that kind of dollar amounts on, when we get along the way and one wants to try something like this, if it works out really good, well, then everybody, when they do theirs, we'll probably allow that too, and they'll get money back. And we won't have to be the ones out there finding contractors. So mm-hmm. I don't necessarily oppose, at least on a trial basis, using it at some point. But I don't like the idea of planning for that.
Basing the financial assurances on the lower cost.
But it costs less to do it this way. So why would they have to? It doesn't increase risk. It decreases the dollar amount we're talking about. But someone's going to have to tell me how this increases risk. If they can effectively take the towers down this way with that amount of money and reduce compaction, which is a huge benefit to the landowner, less remediation, less disturbance by dropping them on the roads, it just seems like what's being confused here, and maybe that's not the best word, but we either have a problem with how we wrote our own rules, which I don't think we do, because we can at any time require the owner to file an updated decommissioning plan after the 10-year initial approval, every five. 10 years is a long time. But we, our hands are on the reins. We can tell them at any time, wow, you know, things have really spiked. We need new plans to account for inflation. I mean, now might be the time for the initial plans that, that came in because things have spiked. And we can do that. We have that, that ability. But to worry about not having enough money when you don't need as much money goes back really to an argument on the method. And that was my burden of proof question, if, and that may not be the best way to... They gave us a plan. They said, we're going to drop these. You know, they addressed the fiberglass issue of, you know, if by taking those down individually, the blades, not just, you know, toppling the whole works. They said, hey, we're going to take the foundations 12 inches below the requirement, and we're going to drop these on roads which are already compacted and they're already going to have to be remediated anyway. And you do get away from the large crane. Mm-hmm. Now, if I'm a landowner and I'm told that they can't do that, I don't know that I'd be terribly happy. If I had my druthers and they were on my land right now, I would say, absolutely do it this way. If you're going to drop those things on the road, which has already been disturbed, please do. So the cost is different, but we didn't even blink at these plans that were dramatically different. And I had brought it up, you know, the cost concerns on some of the really low figures as we were going through the process. And I asked that we circle back at some point in time. I don't think we have yet. But I also don't want to mix cases. But we're mixing industries too, though, in terms of, well, coal has to do this. And we might as well throw in, well, oil has to do this. But those are all things that I think we have, I know we have the ability to address if we have legitimate concerns with, you know, with some foundation to say this is why in our decommissioning rules, because the law itself is very general. It gives us the discretion in terms of depth, in terms of site restoration, in terms of grading, topsoil restoration, et cetera. And at this point, don't we really have to come back and justify that, well, their plan is flawed? Or can we just say, we just don't like it and we won't do it. And we really don't have a reason other than we just don't like it because we don't know.
Sure. So the decommissioning plan cost estimate must be made by a professional engineer. May include decommissioning cost estimate, including salvage value, in addition to decommissioning cost estimate, excluding salvage value. And then it's got the filing requirements. And then if you get down into 690908, which is financial assurance, it gives the commission a lot of discretion in what form of financial insurance you guys are going to accept from a company, whether it's a parent guarantee or a bond or any of the approved ones within that section. And if you get a little bit further down into there, the commission may require additional financial assurance upon a finding that current financial assurance for a facility is not sufficient to ensure complete decommissioning. So as these are reviewed and they're filing them in the future, if we take a look at them, you guys have the ability to increase the amount because due to inflation or other things, we can be like, you know what, this isn't adequate anymore. This needs to be a higher amount. And just a lot of what's in the rule is gives the commission discretion to determine what amount is appropriate and what form of financial assurance is appropriate. And again, you can require them to be updated more often. And when they are updated, you guys have the ability to state that you don't believe it's enough anymore, and they would have to, and you guys can require additional financial assurance.
So I think you raised some good questions there, Brian, and it kind of clarifies some things. So I feel, Randy, like your concern is the dollar amount now, but so do you question the dollar, that the amount that they think it costs to do it in their method, that that's too low? Or do you feel like they can't do it, like this method doesn't work?
I don't know. I feel like what we have is a huge anomaly among all the players in the state. We've got, you know, yes, they all set up their own entity for each wind farm, but we also have multiple umbrella ownership groups, you know, NextEra, XL, Acciona, there's multiples of them. And one comes up with something that costs not much more than half as much as what all the rest come up. I don't want to come back to that, but this is a good point. I just want to interject something. So when I made comparisons with coal, I said at the beginning, they're not completely comparable. I mean, coal goes through a whole lot more than what anything we've created in rules for wind here does. And so they're not completely comparable, but when we start talking about oil and gas, what to me is so much different is coal reclamation and wind reclamation is what we regulate. We don't do oil and gas reclamation. And so I think that's a big distinction in what we do as opposed to what somebody else does. And as far as the huge variation in the previous estimates that we've gotten with a traditional decommissioning plan, it's why I've always kind of, or at least often, tried to emphasize it's not the per turbine amount, it's the dollar amount, because one has much different turbines than the other, one is much more spread out than another one might be, and so, because you not only have to take down the turbines, but in many cases you have to take out roads or other facilities. One might be in very difficult terrain where they had to build all the roads. The next one might have been in good terrain where every section line is developed and they had to just develop some little offshoot roads. And so there's big differences. And there's also this, some of the highest ones tend to be regulated companies that I think get a rate of return, and so they're probably pretty generous in their cost estimates.
That's a good question or point. Adam, we have breakdowns of, you might know this too, but we have a breakdown in terms of the general costs of decommissioning, correct? The decommissioning plans provide at least some level of detail. I would hope they do, and I would hope we've asked for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you see a large variation in restoring roadways? Well, roads, I should say.
No, I wouldn't know off the top of my head here.
Because I would guess if that's a concern, we've caught that.
Yeah.
That this is... So I think it's a good point, and if not, well, that's on us to not be looking at it in a more detailed fashion. I just have to get back, though, to... I guess I'm still waiting. Is it on us to say it doesn't work because of this? Because the rules don't specify anything in terms of a method. They say absolutely nothing in terms of you have to bring a crane in, you have to do X, Y, and Z. It doesn't say you can't use the felling method. It doesn't say you can't use dynamite, which would be an extreme, obviously. We could sell tickets and do quite well. People watching that, but obviously not realistic. Fun thought, maybe, the rules just, I mean, we wrote them. We didn't say, there's absolutely nothing when I look at them that's specific in terms of method used, a method that has to be used. So that's a concern of mine, that all of a sudden we're rewriting the rules through, in an indirect way, through an order when that's not the right way to go about it.
I think
we're not following the law, I don't think.
Well, I think we are following the law, but I guess to finish answering the previous question, though, was as far as the dollar amount and such. Despite all these differences that I talked about, the one thing that is so unique from all the other differences is that here, this one operator finds a different technique. Instead of dismantling them, we'll pull them over with a dozer and just pick the stuff up. That is 60% less. And no one else did that. And based on this, I mean, I don't know if there are any other examples given. I looked up that IO one. I mean, they would just clearly appear to me from what I was able to find on the internet to be very small little turbines. And I don't know how well it worked either. The company says it worked. It worked for them. I don't know whether it worked for others. Because we just don't have information. And to take this one company's totally different way of doing things and say, yeah, we haven't heard anything why it doesn't work, so we'll accept that, knowing that if we accept this, then I would feel, and I don't know about legally, but in my heart, it would be discriminatory not to let all the rest cut theirs down to, you know, by the similar amount and plan on pulling theirs over with dozers too. To me, there just is not enough evidence of the successfulness of this compared to what other companies have planned to do. I mean, there's just it's a too good to be true kind of thing. Why didn't all the other companies do it this way?
How do we know the other companies are right?
Yeah, that's my concern. I don't have any experience with the other method either.
I mean, maybe they're causing more disturbance and ripping up rancher farmer's land unduly, you know, and that's one of the things I'm thinking. It's like, are we forcing, you know, is there a better way to do it from a landowner perspective? And I'm not talking about easements, that's outside of our purview, but, you know, things change, they evolve rapidly, and I would bet the coal industry has found more efficient ways to reclaim the land, and they do it more efficiently today than they did it 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago. Or maybe it's the exact same thing over, and I know there are consistencies in all of this, but, you know, think of fracking in the Bakken. You know, all of a sudden, you know, someone decided to go from 1 mile to 2 mile laterals. That was a big deal. Someone had to go first, and then someone went from 2 miles to 3 and then 3.5, but someone had to go first. So I need something that said, this just won't work, and here's why. And I don't have that, and I can't just say, well, it won't work because the dollar amount is lower than the other ones. That doesn't prove anything. That's the challenge for me on this, because we wrote the rules. I don't think this is beyond the scope of how those rules are written at all. So now we just don't like it. I'd like to have something a little more than that, so maybe you can help me out, Brian.
You guys are all correct. There is nothing in the law or rule that specifies methodology for reclamation. What we are allowed to weigh in on is the method in which the financial assurance is provided, and also that it's adequate. So to me, this isn't a matter of felling versus anything else. It's a matter of does the commission believe that this is an adequate dollar amount to completely decommission the facility if worst case scenario happens and the company does not do it themselves?
Well, we do have the authority to approve the plan, though.
Yes. That as well, yep.
So that's just then that's it. Like, we get to use our judgment to approve the plan.
Correct.
If we don't feel that it's plausible or feasible, or we've gotten evidence that it doesn't work someplace or whatever, but I agree with Brian that I haven't seen that evidence, and I quite honestly didn't get a lot of evidence from other companies on their proposed plans that it worked, because this hasn't been done anywhere a lot. Like, there haven't been a lot of wind farms decommissioned in this world.
It just, it makes sense industry. That that's how they put them up, so taking them down that way would work as well. But again, that's just...
But if you go through piece by piece, I mean, they're taking the blades off. That can be done. They put them up there, they take them down. You know, they're draining all the fluids out. A lot of it is the same. The one piece that's different is how they take the actual turbine tower.
The hub.
The hub. Whether they lower it with the crane or let it drop. I mean, that's essentially the difference here.
I will say the filing does indicate that the consultant did consult with the owner of Cerro Gordo Wind Farm, which is the Iowa farm that used the felling approach, that they did make inquiries to the landowners, and they indicated that no landowner had made claims for lost productivity as a result of the felling approach. I know that doesn't resolve.
When were they felled? I did not find that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, we could probably follow up with the company as well as what kind of turbine heights, because I remember asking the question, and I just looked at some of the decommissioning plans, and I can't recall what that conversation entailed. But I think it'd be good to...
The article I read was a 2020 article, and it was more, you know, a story about how these new bigger turbines were going to come in and should last really a long time. I wasn't even clear whether, like, the felling... I sensed that the construction wasn't completely done, but this article was not clear about that, of the new ones. So I'm not sure if the old ones were even removed by then. So I'm guessing this is something that has happened in the last couple of years, but it was not stated. Maybe they pulled them over 10 years ago and waited a while to redevelop. I can't say for sure, but that was my sense, that it only happened in the last couple of years. So
that was kind of my sense too.
So what about a couple options for, like, a compromise here? Because I will note that the rules require them, regardless of the method, to grade and restore topsoil of areas disturbed by the facility. And so even if the felling method creates more damage, they're obligated to fix it. And nothing suggests that they wouldn't have to do that. So what about requesting a slightly higher contingency, approving it, requiring them to come back in, like, not 10 years, but 5 years or 3 years or something sooner, and having a slightly higher contingency.
And then maybe you
clarify. We could do that, right?
Absolutely. Yes. Oh, sorry.
I wasn't necessarily asking you, Brian. I was seeing if my colleagues would be supportive of that. But well, if you can prove that it's okay.
I was waiting for Brian's answer. I thought, can we do this?
Yeah, I believe what the commission may at any time require the owner to file an updated decommissioning plan. Absolutely. I think that's well within the commission's ability to do.
And then one thing to point out as well, in terms of the inflationary concern, there is a bit of a hedge built into it, given that we require the financial assurance, i.e. in this case the bond, to be based on excluding the value of salvage. So that would partially offset as a benefit, since we do have kind of runaway inflation right now.
How many bonds have we actually gotten? I think this might be one of the few bonds, which is another significant positive, in my opinion, of this plan.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we only have one other bond issued, and a good clarification that I made earlier is that maybe we need to clarify whether, you know, just to ensure that I'm correct in thinking that Acciona would file the bond. Yeah, I'm almost positive that Acciona would, however the filing indicates to Tonka. However, I think they generally use them interchangeably.
Sure, but just to clarify that. Yeah. Good point.
Right, and the ones that don't have bonds, the parent guarantees, you're talking A ratings, Moody's, S&P, et cetera. We're talking tangible net worth amounts and other things. I think the protections are very, very strong with how this has been written. I think it's just really, it's about... This boils down to the method, which, I, again, broken record, I just can't see anything where it doesn't work. And when I think about dropping them on a compacted road, I just can't come up with a scenario in my mind where that isn't a heck of a lot better than just dropping them onto undisturbed land.
Or well, bringing they don't drop them, they rest, they set them.
Yeah,
the method.
Or the cranes, I mean.
Yeah,
cranes on undisturbed land to bring them on, bring them down. You know, land that probably was compacted when they went up. But, you know, over the course of time, microbial activity, et cetera, and just letting nature do what it does. So we could... What are your thoughts on Julie's scenario? On
I thought there was more coming to that. I am not in favor of approving a one-off idea like this that is this unique and this much cost saving, and knowing that that's going to be the standard. And you say, you know, yeah, it'll probably work. And maybe based on their story, it looks like it will. And if it doesn't, then I don't know what we're going to do about it, because we won't have enough money in our financial assurances to do it any better than they can. And so if things explode when they pull them over or something like that, and that, I don't mean explode like that.
What's the 10, so this 10 million, what's the next lowest amount for a decommissioning plan? Do you know offhand?
It would have to be one of the smaller ones. My guess is it would, it would really be one of those, probably those $1.6 million ones by Minn Kota, but that's not exactly comparable.
Yeah.
So like a comparable one, you know, we'd have to, you'd have to kind of...
Look at it.
Yeah, we'd have to take a look at that.
What's, what is the total number of turbines on this? The
total number of turbines is...
57?
It is... In North Dakota, 61. It's 61.
61.
Yeah, it's partly on the border.
So this would be about 165,000 on average per turbine.
Yeah. Yep. It's about 155. Yeah. So yeah.
Okay. And we already have decommissioning estimates for other facilities, and I know they're different, but they're not that different. At 128,000. So this one's more than some of the other plans we've already approved.
I mean, we kind of have to decide whether we're concerned about the method or the amount of money.
It's the method. To me, that's the point I'm making, and I don't want to use cost savings because it almost comes across as we really want to make them pay and make it. If they honestly, if companies came in and said we can take these down and it's gonna average $75,000 a turbine, between $75,000 and $85,000, depending on terrain and whatnot, I'd say good for them. I mean, if
would you?
They can back it up with real evidence.
Okay.
Which I think the company has. Absolutely. I mean, for us to send a message to industry that we don't want you to be more efficient.
Yeah.
And that's...
Or innovative.
That is a terrible message in my opinion. And I know that's not the intent, but I think we have to be careful not to send it. You know, if companies are more efficient, if the mining industry is more efficient, it saves and preserves jobs or creates new ones. If, arguably, but it helps the industry overall. If oil and gas can be more efficient, it helps the industry overall. And that's, we're not the Department of Commerce, but it doesn't mean we don't all like to see North Dakota do well. So I just, if someone could say, okay, here's why the method doesn't work. And I haven't heard that yet.
And I think, you know, I pretty much agree with everything you said when you added the part about if they can back it up with evidence. And so far, standard of evidence is the company coming in and talking about a wind farm where this worked well, according to the company, at some point, we don't know when, at some size of turbines, we don't know what. If that's our standard of evidence of success, then we have it and we should approve it. I don't find that to be real.
Do we have evidence on the other method? That that's less from a compaction standpoint overall.
Well,
I'm thinking there's no way it can be less in terms of less compaction on the more expensive method.
We do know that. I mean, we realistically assume that wherever they need to go with the cranes to dismantle them, they've already been with the cranes to set them up. So, this
I thought
shouldn't really be a lot of change there. And most of the area where they're going to be going with cranes to dismantle them, there's a bunch of concrete 3 or 4 feet under the surface that is probably not going to make that real productive farmland anyways. But when you get way outside of that area by toppling them, there may be differences.
I thought our requirement that we have the engineering firms providing the cost estimate was our protection that this is a proven method.
Yeah.
And so we have that, right? Like this is a engineering firm that provided these estimates?
Yes, what always happens, or what has always happened in the past, is that a consultant, which is an engineer, will author one of these estimates, and then it has to be stamped by a North Dakota engineer as well. So on every one of these cost estimates, a North Dakota engineer stamp has to be on it.
Have we received that for this?
Yes, we have.
Which firm?
There is a... What's that? I think it's on here. It's on the first page. It's...
Sorry. Sure.
Yeah, you'd have to...
The first page of the engineer report?
Professional engineer. Yeah, the whole thing was written by Westwood.
Yep. And then,
then stamped by Robert Copolis.
Oh, shoot. Yep. It's my understanding that he would likely have reviewed it and then kind of gave his stamp of approval.
Yeah, his stamp is on that.
Yep.
Okay, well, I think we know. I don't know if we have much more to say. It looks to me like Brian and I are supportive and Randy's opposed. I mean, I really prefer to have a a unanimous vote on something like this. It's, but, you know, the middle ground that I felt was a way to get everybody on board was to try to get additional funds available. So, Randy, you wouldn't necessarily be, I mean, the method is not going to be implemented until there's actually a project that needs to be decommissioned. This actually needs to be decommissioned. You've expressed the most concerns about not having enough money at hand. So, you know, this, like, requiring a slightly higher amount, and maybe that loses your support, but a slightly higher amount, and looking at the total dollars available as it relates to this versus other projects, you know, I think that that's puts us in a place where we're treating everybody fairly. If we're mostly concerned about the dollar amount, if your concern is mostly about the dollar amount, I mean, I feel like they've provided what we've asked for in terms of evidence with the third party engineering firm, looking at other projects, adding a 10% contingency, and I like the fact that they're going deeper and taking out more of the concrete, and there's some potential environmental benefits to this methodology that I think are valid and makes common sense to me. So that's where I'm at. I'd support it. I'd also support it requiring a slightly higher amount if it brings you on board.
So one of you will have to bring an order.
We don't have to. We could just vote accordingly on whatever you present and then take it from there.
Well, but it'll take an order to go the other way, so.
True. How would you just disapprove it? You'd bring an order to disapprove it, is that? Because you yes. can't, like, order them. You can't rewrite it yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, if someone can sell me on some real data and scientific evidence in terms of why it won't work, I would change my mind in a heartbeat.
Yeah. If someone had some scientific evidence that it will work, I'd change my mind.
But we don't have a shred of evidence that the other method that, you know, the herd has gone with works either.
All of the evidence that we've decided we need is that the third party engineers believe it's possible, and they're the experts in this stuff. If they think it's possible, they know cranes and all of these methodologies. So
we do base a lot on that because we don't have staff to do that.
Right. Well,
we have you guys staff. We don't have a reclamation staff like we do with.
I'll just say this with mining. Something that I said it before. I think it's important that we follow the rules as we have written them. And I would just, we wrote it this way. Get a stamp of approval from an engineer. We specifically said that. They've done it.
No, we didn't specifically say that. The rules do not say, if you come in with something approved by an engineer, that is approved. We gave ourselves discretion to approve the plan.
I just think there are better ways to... I think, well, I won't say it. It's not that important. I can't see a single thing where their plan contradicts what we wrote and what we did. And again, I'm all ears. I would, other than we're just afraid it might not be enough. It takes more than that, in my opinion. But anyway.
Okay, well, we've been going for an hour and 10 minutes, so I think we can, we've reached a point where we all sort of know where we're at. I think we can close this work session, and Randy's portfolio holder, he can bring forward an order. We also have the opportunity to bring forth an order as well. So with that, PU 1073 work session is completed. Thank you.